I don't think the Friday postgame show anymore, we can say, is that we do it because on Friday the main hosts don't want to do it. I think we now do the Friday postgame show because it's a thing in and of itself, and the audience likes it, and the people who do it like it. I like doing it. I struggle greatly to find what to talk about, but I still like doing it. I know Malcolm enjoys it. So I think the Friday postgame show, we do it on Thursday because that's when there's time on the schedule, and because, yeah, we don't want to stick around after the show on Friday. But we do, the main show hosts would do it, but we want to give you the Friday postgame show. I want to give you a different kind of show than the main hosts would do after the show on Friday. So from now on, I don't want to do an explanation of why we do the Friday postgame show on Thursday, because on Friday, the main show hosts want to get out of here early. I don't think that's the reason anymore. We've outgrown that. And so with that intro, let's move on to this very short Friday postgame show. I want to update briefly day zero in Cape Town. This was a huge story 6 months ago. The city of Cape Town, South Africa, was about to run out of water. Day zero, I think, was set for sometime in the middle of this year or in what we call the fall. But due to strict water conservation measures that have been imposed and followed, and a little bit of rain that's coming in now in the rainy season, day zero has moved not just all the way to 2019, all the way to 2020, which for me means there is no more day zero. That's this whole rainy season and a possibly another rainy season before they have a crisis and run out of water. So I think Cape Town, South Africa, has survived this water crisis. That should not make people in similarly arid areas complacent, but I'm happy for the people of Cape Town. They're not going to run out of water, which would have been a massive humanitarian disaster, unprecedented in modern world, and I don't know how it would have been dealt with. So that's Cape Town. Let's jump back to my backyard, Nicaragua, Central America, Latin America. The Nicaraguan protests continue. We're about 2 months in. So about 2 months ago, Daniel Ortega proposed some cuts to Social Security, very unrevolutionary and very unpopulist for the guy who led the 1979 revolution, Sandinista revolution, 78, 79. And the people protested. So Ortega must be a complete idiot because he did the two wrong things. First, he cracked down violently against the protesters, and then he conceded to their demands anyway. But the people said, enough of you, and they've been protesting ever since, not about the Social Security cuts, which they won on, but now it's just to get rid of him, get him out of office. If Irma can bring up a picture of old Daniel Ortega, this is the revolutionary, I guess I meant young Daniel Ortega first. So there's the revolutionary from the late 70s. And now what does he look like? Old. So his time has passed. This is not a revolutionary. He should go. That's all. I'm not here to make fun of old people. He doesn't even look that bad, but he looks different than he did when he was a revolutionary hanging out with Castro and giving agita to Ronald Reagan. I used to like him back then. Now he's got to go. And I hope the same thing doesn't happen in Bolivia. Evo Morales is going to go for another term next year. He might even win. But so remember how these protests were triggered in Nicaragua. I believe that actually what triggered it was not just the Social Security cuts, but there was a fire, a wildfire that the government was unable or slow to put out, and that really pissed people off. So there could easily be some incident that enrages people in Bolivia. They come out to protest Evo Morales. He's got to refrain from cracking down violently. There's no indication that he would, but he better refrain from that because then it escalates out of control. But in Nicaragua, there's no putting an end to this protest. They're going to be out there, it appears, until Ortega steps down and his wife. So that's Nicaragua. But now let's spend the bulk of this postgame show talking about Mexico. The election, presidential election, is Sunday. And Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who is pictured here, Irma, or I guess it's Ryan, sorry. This guy's going to win probably. I still can't believe it. I feel that some shenanigans are going to be pulled like they were in previous election years when he ran, and that they won't let him do it. But the whole world and all of Mexico and the polls are all pretty much conceding that he's going to win easily. And he is unpredictable. It's a big break from the system like we've seen all over the world, including in the United States, of course. And no one knows what he's going to do, and no one knows what to say about it. It's hard enough to judge the politics and predict politics or what a actual executive in office is going to do after he's elected. But in your own country, you do it in Mexico, where the institutions are less predictable, less reliable. It's hard to do. Now, this guy was mayor of Mexico City, and he was a very competent mayor by all measures. So there is some indication that he will be a competent president of Mexico. But he's going to be a big break from the Mexican system, the parties that have dominated Mexico for the past 18 years and 80 or 90 years. And he's coming from the left. He's a populist candidate. He wants to break corruption and help the poor and reduce violence. And he's going to have a different take on the drug war and economic theories. It's unpredictable. So some articles in the U.S. Compare him to Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, who imposed... Hugo Chavez went way too far in screwing with how modern economies work in the market, and with the help of collapsing oil prices, caused Venezuela to fall into chaos. There's no evidence that Mexico is Venezuela or that López Obrador is Chavez. That article is tempting to write because it's simple, but it doesn't make really any sense. At the same time, there are articles comparing AMLO to Andrés Manuel López Obrador to Donald Trump, who's a right winger, whereas Chavez was considered a left winger. So they just don't know what to write. No one knows what to write, so you'll just compare them to others. I'm going to compare López Obrador to Albert Einstein because they both walk on two legs and they work at a desk sometimes. So he must be like Einstein. He's going to be a great president. No, the articles don't make any sense. You'd be nice to have an informed vote, but it's hard. So I want him to win because I know that the other presidential candidates in Mexico from the ruling party and the PAN are not going to change much. They're going to be more same old, same old. Oh, that's the terrible, dangerous attitude that a lot of intelligent people use to vote for Donald Trump. But Donald Trump's different. Donald Trump was incompetent. Donald Trump was a racist. We knew that before the campaign and during the campaign. There's no indication that Andrés Manuel Obrador is massively corrupt. There's a little bit of corruption scandals in his past, but they're better than the corruption accusations against the other politicians. And there's no indication. Racism is very different in Mexico than in the United States. There's plenty of it, but there's no indication that he's going to rule as a racist president. He appears to have matured in his views of the market, so he's not going to go all, you know, neoliberal and try to impose corporate rule on Mexico. But on the other hand, he's not going to go full Chavez, it appears. There's no indication that he will. He might steer a reasonable course that tries to rebalance economic and wealth distribution in Mexico. So I want him to win and see what happens. It's easy for me to say I don't live there, but I care about the place, so it's a sincere opinion. And we'll find out by Sunday night who they declare the winner in the presidential election. It'll be interesting to see Trump's reaction because Trump's unpredictable. I don't really care about him. But so ideologically, López Obrador is opposed to Trump, but Trump likes other disruptors, and López Obrador is a disruptor. Maybe there'll be good relationships with the United States. Who knows? We'll see. So that's Sunday and something to put on your calendars and look forward to. Onto the environment. I read an article about how destruction of world forests is continuing unabated. 2017, by this study, was the second worst year of deforestation in the world, behind only 2016. One of the sad little footnotes of 2017 was in the country of Colombia, there was some, remember, a historic peace deal ending two or three generations of violence and political internal civil warfare in Colombia. But because of this peace deal, now that has encouraged people to spread out into the forested areas and begin to clear the forests for other economic activities, cattle ranching, mining, building houses. So one of the sad consequences of the Colombia peace deal is more deforestation. And we know how bad deforestation is. Forests are the lungs of the earth. They can suck up CO2. If you destroy the forests, you're helping increase the CO2 in the atmosphere and enhancing the effects of climate change, and it's terrible. And I would love to live in a U.S. where there's a president who would call an emergency press conference to talk about deforestation or ocean acidification or climate change in general. Yes, Bernie Sanders might be the guy who would do such a thing, but not even Obama did it. And so these global ecological problems continue with no serious efforts by the leaders of the Western world to solve them. There are plenty of organizations within those countries who are trying to do something, but highest level political action is not that existent in solving global environmental crises. Because the pathway forward is there. So now I want to do a little political story that is similar to what you might find on the main show, which I try to not do, but I want to take an angle on a story that surely on Thursday or Friday, Cenk and the main show covered. This is a Washington Post article that on the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez upset in the New York congressional race that was very favorable to the movement, to the candidate, to the Young Turks, to Cenk in particular. And the theme of the article is, once again, just like in 2016 with Donald Trump, the mainstream media didn't see this candidate coming and didn't give her any coverage, but the Young Turks did. That's all fine, and Cenk's going to talk about that. My angle harkens back to what I said last week. Why do these reporters have to find the stories on these political campaigns about candidates who might win, who might do an upset, so that they don't? Why don't they just cover all of the campaigns and all the candidates? Not all, but the major ones. A newspaper is this thick and comes out every day. And the internet, the space is unlimited. TV, radio, you can talk about anything. Why do they have to? Why are we accusing them of just of not catching the movement that brought Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to her victory? Why didn't they just cover the race anyway, even if she was going to lose? And cover. There's 435 congressional races. Let's hear about all of them. If you covered, yeah, sure, in some initial polls or in predictions, the incumbent or some candidate might be leading 70-30 or 80-20, but that's partially because no one covers these races. Let's have a functioning press and a functioning democracy and cover the races a little bit where there's a dominant candidate or incumbent and challengers. And maybe you'll see that these races will be a slightly more competitive after you have coverage and people are exposed to the candidates. So that's the take, that I don't just fault the reporters for missing her movement, which they say comes out of nowhere. I fault the reporters for not covering these races at all, whether the challengers are going to win, lose, or get crushed, or make it close, or anything. Just cover the races. There's plenty. Let's be informed about what's going on. Let's be informed about what's going on every day in our legislative bodies in detail. But in summary form, in detail, you know, not C-SPAN where they just turn a camera on and let you watch for hours and hours. There's time for that, and it's not that educational. And let's talk about the races. Let's cover that. I know you can get it on the internet now in blogs, and that's good. And that's why new media is stealing audience from old media. But it's just my word of advice to old media, although only members watch this, so it's pointless to give that message in the post-game show. But if you got this far, you heard it. That was my take on that article. And that's it for this Friday post-game show. I'm sorry it couldn't be longer. We're going to keep trying next week, the week after. Well, next week, sure. Yeah, there'll be one next week. It'll be July 5th. That'll be fun. Then I'll be away for a couple weeks, but I hope Malcolm will be able to take back over by then. So thank you for being members and watching this show and supporting me in, for the most part, in your comments, which I do read. And have a good weekend. Thanks again. Bye.